It's Friday, July 22nd, 2016, and it's about 12:45 p.m. And I'm at the very beginning of the Mount Williamson hike. Mount Williamson is one of a number of 8,000-foot plus peaks in the San Gabriel Mountains. You know, by Andes or Himalayan standards, the San Gabriels are a joke, but for California, and even compared to the Sierras, there's nothing much about them, but it's kind of a high desert situation. You got pine trees, and all the trails are cut into deep, steep slopes, which means that it's pretty safe, you know, in terms of you're being tracked by a mountain lion. You just have that, you know, very good visibility, and nothing can come at you from your right or left, usually, you know, up or down the mountain. It's, you know, some of these slopes are, many of them are so steep that, you know, really even lizards send down rocks. So I feel very safe here. And also, given that it is sort of a, again, a very high desert, whatever the word is, you know, subalpine situation, you don't have, you know, an overgrowth of vegetation. And so you've got pine needles and pine trees and then manzanita, sequoia, and then some, you know, some flowers that come up springtime, summertime, and a variety of low-lying shrubs, but it's not overgrown. And then the views, given that these are, it's not just one huge kind of plateau or something. It's all these peaks have extraordinary views. And then the various peaks and saddles, gaps, they funnel the air flow. And so many places along the trail, along these ridges, you get extraordinary breezes. So enlivening. And right now, today, I'd say Coachella Valley, you're looking at 115 degrees, maybe more. Could spike to as high as 120. And even in the city of Wrightwood, or the town of Wrightwood, which is a, you know, mountain, little mountain town at the base of some ski operations that, you know, with all the geoengineering, the manufactured drought, etc., that's going on, we haven't gotten much snowfall. So the ski, I think it's called Mountain High, but the skiing is non-existent right now in the winter. There might be a week or two of it at most now. This kills that industry. And it kills the groundwater, because what's so nice about the snowpack is that it melts, you know, fairly slowly, and it just feeds the trees and feeds the groundwater. You know, the whatever's underneath us, the reservoirs. And what am I saying here today? Beautiful day, a couple of aerosol sprays above, but not directly above me right now. Maybe they were earlier. I'll probably be downwind from some at some point. This is what I'm doing right now is I'm hiking this every other day when I can, like during vacations. And there's some other trails I do up here. But what's extraordinary for me is the reduced electromagnetic field. This hike is not in direct line of sight of any ground-based transmitters. There are some higher sections of the trail where you get more exposed, but things are pretty far away. And my experience, you know, has told me that if you've got a lower mountain range between you and the transmitting source, some hills, etc., they really help to deflect the EMF that hits, that hits lower down. You know, they kind of reflect off, they're diminished by these hills, and so all you really get, you don't get this avalanche of EMF coming your way, because everything that has hit those hills just, is it doesn't come to you at your higher location. All you're getting is the direct line of sight transmission, as opposed to this whole, again, flow, avalanche-like of mass of EMF, of radiation that's hitting all sorts of points, but then gathering steam and barreling up to wherever you are. That just doesn't happen when you have intervening geographical features. So it's always good to have a hill between you and the offending source of toxic source. A lot fewer birds. Reports are that with the aluminum, barium, other spraying that's going on, as well as the reduced rainfall, insect populations, and beneath them, the microorganisms in the soil, they're down 90%. Scientists that are not completely silenced, because the bulk of them either work in some capacity for the Department of Defense, or contractors under agreement with them, or government agencies that basically have a non-disclosure agreements, gag orders on whatever they're doing. Fish that are caught, fish that normally, let's say trout in the Northern California area that eat aquatic insects that are flying near the surface of the water. Because the insect population is down, these trout are being caught and then dissected, and their stomachs are empty. And so the fish feed on the insects, the birds feed on the insects, and again, the insect population is down 90%. So, not good. Saw a blue jay, haven't seen one of them in a while. But basically, it's pretty much a desert up here. Life is dying, no doubt. What I do on this, and this is what I want to comment on, is my workout routine right now. Because I went home, came home 2 days ago from this, day before yesterday, really jazzed, pretty beat, but very grounded, very pleased. And I tweaked a couple of things and added a little more to it. And what I do is two repeats of a hike that's about 2.5 miles long with 1,600 feet of elevation gain. Do the math, it's pretty steep. Pretty gradual. I mean, it's not a rock face, that's for sure. But it's, you can keep pretty stable footing throughout it. But I'm doing that twice. So the first time I'm looking at, getting a pretty good time. And then the second time, often there's psychological dimensions. So I go back down to the parking lot, reassemble myself, refill my waters, change out a sopped shirt or two, and then head back up. And it's at that midpoint that, and before the midpoint that, hell, you've just spent an hour coming down. By the way, that round trip takes 2.5 to 3 hours. And you're thinking on the way back down the first time, oh man, it'd be nice just to get cleaned up at the car and go home, but it's not what my body needs, and it's expensive. I am the parking area here for Mount Williamson for the trailhead is about 120 miles from my house and 2 hours driving. A little more than that, 2 hours, 5 to 10, depends. It's such an expensive proposition, time-wise, gasoline-wise, you know, it's hard for me to justify a short exercise program up here. And also, if I'm trying to get away with hiking every other day, or serious exercise only every other day, as opposed to a nice, moderate, 3 to 4 hour hike every day, which is my preference, something a little less intense that I do later in the day, you know, jump on the trail at 4, get off at 8, as opposed to here, you know, get on the trail much earlier, and because you got a long drive home. It's just, I got more shade, and it's just much more convenient, but I don't have that right now. All the trails in the Coachella Valley, Palm Springs area are heavily radiated. You know, all of them have cellular connectivity. This one doesn't. And at least to my knowledge, it doesn't. There's some spots where you can get it, but I don't think right here. Not on the eastern flank of this mountain that is in the electromagnetic shadow of Hawkins Ridge, which is about 9,000 feet, or no, 85 or something. That blocks the radiation from that overlooks Wrightwood. I can't deal with Wrightwood. Oh my God, just resting here a second. Yeah, I take off my hat, my glasses. I'm not going to undo my pack and all this other stuff that I do when I'm really tired. I'm not doing that right now. I'm just sort of massaging my face, kneading my lymph glands, my salivary glands, whatever's going on in my lower jaw, around my ears, squeezing my head. I swear that last summer, and people noticed it, I came back after a month or so of this on a very regular basis, and people said some of my gray hair had turned black. I just looked younger, and I don't doubt it. This past year's been brutal, and because of the EMF exposure in my workplace and at home, and my not having a satisfactory aerobic outlet. And that's another thing, you know, the Palm Springs area, it's not just EMF, you know, it's not pleasant. I've hiked in 104 degree temps and, you know, try to get going on a steep hike around at 90 degrees and get off the hike at 104. And it's brutal, it's taxing, it's not fun, and it's just, I don't like it with my heart. I don't like my heart beating frantically, but only just to sweat and to try to keep cool. It's not strengthening, it's kind of enervating overall. Today it was 78 at the trailhead, but it'll get progressively cooler as I climb. So getting back to one of my main points is that I found that 2.5 miles going to with 1600 feet of elevation gain, going back down, so it's 5 miles round trip, and then doing that again, that was the perfect for me, for my age. You know, I'm 51 and weigh 220 pounds, quite tired, not the health that I used to be just a couple years ago, you know, where I was 10 or 20 pounds lighter. You know, with my blood pressure being better, It's for where I am, this overall 10 miles and 3,200 feet of elevation gain in a period of about 6 hours is perfect. And then on the return of the second time, I lie out. I've got a shaded spot in the wind under pine trees with a nice windy bluff. No bugs, because the wind keeps that down, if there are any bugs at all anyway. A few gnats, and once in a while a mosquito. But I lie down there, and I grok, or I attempt to grok, looking up at trees, listening to the wind, smelling the pine sap that's been aerosolized. I'll take pine sap and its various nutrients and aromatic healing properties. I'll take that over the synthetic biologies and viruses and heavy metals and these other, and coal fly ash, and these other materials unknown that were being dumped, upon us and the ecosystems of the planet. You know, I'll take the pine sap in the air any day over that. And I do, I want to emphasize that it's my experience, makes good sense, that what you smell is a food source. It's nutrients. It passes the blood-brain barrier. It goes into the bloodstream through the lungs. And something extraordinary about pine. You know, we've been raised on it, and we need more of it. And there's other, you know, I like sage, I like thyme, you know, rosemary, whatever it is, these herbs that you can have growing around your house. Sage you find in some desert, along some desert hikes, especially in areas where there have been rock slides. They like, I don't know why, but they tend to like areas where there's been disruption. I'm not sure. You know, maybe they just have an easier time taking root in just raw dirt with no other plants around. But, and so there is a beneficial aspect to it. You know, as opposed to someone at their 24-hour fitness complex where you have a smell of cleaning solvents, chlorine, and the cologne perfumes of your fellow exercise people, and then of course the conditioned air, which is not healthful. I used to react really negatively to air conditioned air. It would dry out my eyes, make me irritable, and I would rather be in, you know, 90 degrees without it back then. But I'm not as healthy now, not as resilient, and I don't handle high temperatures as well as I used to. And so I don't have the immediate negative reaction to AC that I used to. At least not knowingly, not obviously. I'll do what I can. I don't normally talk the whole way up, but this, of course, when you're distracted like this, your time, it'll cut down on my time because I'm not able to focus as well, but I'm getting a lot out of this regardless. Other aspects I'm looking at, well, first, okay, again, think about that, 3,200 feet and 10 miles in 6 or 6.5 hours, you know, if you take your time and rest on, you know, one of the legs. And what I found was this. For me, and this also took a little bit of time of getting back into the flow of things, I'm starting to, it's like you can have your chain, you can be unhealthy and be on a negative bent, negative direction, and the body could be deteriorating because of your poor dietary lifestyle, whatever exposures you've got on whatever dimension, in whatever dimension, they can add up and compromise you. And I mean compromise. And I was that way this year. And it just solidified in terms of weight gain, attitude, and aging. But you get to a place where something's activated. I don't know if it's the human growth hormone or endorphins or God knows what, but my skin was vibrating. It just felt so soft and pliable. I mean, look, you're sweating like a pig, hiking 3,200 feet up, you know, pine air, breezes through the trees, no one else on the trail. Because everyone, 80% of the people that come here to this general area, go in the other direction where there's a spring and there's a campground. But I'm not camping. And frankly, I don't really trust the groundwater, even though it is at 7,500 feet. Yeah, you'd think it would be pretty pure, but I have a feeling there's quite a few aluminum nanoparticles in that water, despite its having been filtered through layers of rock. You know, the aluminum material is so tiny. But they're all going that way. And in that direction, you've got more deer. And, you know, where there's deer, there's mountain lions. I'm in a drier place, and there's just less action here, which is fine. I'm here for the fresh air, for the views. Not here to run into 10 other people when I'm exercising. And I'm not here to run into a mountain lion. You know, so it's all good. But going home, I was very relaxed. I was actually listening to some speeches on the 20th. It was the second to last day of the Republican National Convention. And because of Donald Trump's stance on the economy, on trade, and on self-reliance, and a bunch of number of other things, I have grown distrustful of the government and of this enormous, I'm not going to get into that now, but, you know, the perpetrators of the 9/11 attacks, Oklahoma City bombing, the anthrax, a whole bunch of things. They have not been held to account. Many of them work in the U.S. government or contractors of the U.S. government and had foreknowledge of all these things and or participated in them. That's my opinion based on a lot of research. And so, you know, when the Democrats say, hey, get over it, life is good, it isn't good. We need a break. We need people to be held accountable, and I think there's more of a chance of that with Trump than certainly with Hillary Clinton. But that's a whole nother subject. Getting back to this, that night I slept pretty well, but I felt energized all night long. And I woke up in the morning feeling just very kind of poised and alert. And I felt that fat was being pulled off of my midriff, that my love handles were tightening, and that I was just burning more calories. And all day long, I was kind of patting my face, feeling kind of like an increased youthfulness in my face, in my skin. A moisturizing effect. And walking around, I felt strong. And I just brought home that I was on a suspended high, physically and energetically, from the previous day's two summits of this mountain. And I haven't felt this good after a hike this whole summer. I've been trying hard, but it's only now, after, I'm not sure, 3 weeks of effort, that I'm now feeling like I'm in a groove. But part of it was I didn't have the right routine. I had some others that were too exposed to the sun, too steep and damaging to my knees, too long, too grueling. But this one is perfect right now, again, for who I am, where I am. And my muscles are starting to strengthen. So what is this all to say? I've always made the argument that my meditation is a holistic body-mind activity. Body-mind-spirit activity. I'm going to stop checking here. And I just dropped my hat on the ground. I got a big straw hat. Does a darn good job. Nothing beats it. And it's been the case. It's been a case kind of knowingly since, I would say, middle school for me. My embracing, well, it goes before that. I mean, you know, all the time at the beach and the water, surfing, you know, etc. That's always been a part of, you know, outdoors and in my, you know, doing things has always been a big part of my life. It should be a big part of any healthy person's life. But luckily I was born before iPads and cell phones, and I benefited from that. But it was in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade that I was, I would say, OCD. That's obsessive compulsive disorder. That's just kind of a joke about, yeah, I was just very focused on it. I don't think it was dysfunctional in any way. But I would play ping pong against the backboard of a ping pong table for more than an hour at a time. I would go play tennis with people. I would play basketball by myself at a basketball hoop for hours a day. And then with other people. I remember when I was in 7th and 8th grade, I was on a basketball team. And for my school, I started as a forward. I was also student body president my 8th grade year. Just saying that. Proud of that. It was just my whole overall state was just, it was in a very positive way. But I would go do pickup games. My father lived on Franklin Street in San Francisco for a few years, and during that time, and I would go to this park that I think was near where the dock slips are. I don't know how far it was away, maybe a mile, maybe more, I don't remember, but it was near the ocean, and there'd be a lot of black people there, a lot of, you know, all kinds of colors, but largely older people that were black. And as a kid, you know, 13, 14, white, and I'd be playing in their games, and it was rough. And I'd play for hours, just soaked. Then I'd run home with my basketball and have a peanut butter and honey sandwich, just dripping with honey, maybe lathered up with some butter on it, just super saturated calories. And I'd go back and do it again. I would spend my days like this in the summers. I'm looking at some old pictures, and My hair was typically bleached, you know, from the sun. Who do you know that spends so much time in the sun these days that their sun gets bleached? I mean, their hair gets bleached. It's not as common as it used to be. You know, the ultraviolet rays are worse now than was when I was a kid. And, you know, it's people don't spend as much time outside as they used to. Fear is taking hold in our communities, and the digital lifestyle is sedentary and inward and very much removed from the real world. It's inside, but that's where more of people's attention is now. And that went on. I did decathlons in high school, but it was a year long. I mean, I did some football. I did track every year, football my first 2 years. And that was just, you know, running a lot. And so in high school, when I did track, I started running. I would do 2-hour runs. And back then, I was proud of myself. I thought that a 2-hour run, was, and I did that, I think, a few times a week. Hang on here. Okay, I'd stop there for, I took off my shirt, changed my shirt, doused my head with water, rinsed my armpits a bit. I'm carrying 120 ounces of water, distilled. That's enough for a 3-hour hike here, for easily, generally, at the temperatures I'm in. So it was in high school, they began these 2-hour runs, more or less. And I was influenced. I read a lot of books. At that time, I read Bruce Jenner's biography of his 1976 gold medal win, his workout routine. And I had some other books on exercise. One of them that influenced me a lot was called the Van Aken Method. I think he's maybe Australian, another country. But his whole point was just, you know, what I took home with it is just build up endurance. Long, slow, keep at it. He might have had some, I think he had some fast exercises too, but for the endurance, long endurance, it was just go a long time and keep moving. And that was my philosophy. Slow, steady, determined, like an icebreaker or a, you know, just an immovable resolve, unshakable resolve. And that's what you get, you know, going up and down hills. And when I was going up hills, I didn't stop, I didn't walk. But I did just slow my gait till I was almost shuffling, but it was still that arm pumping, foot shuffling, knee lifting a little bit movement. And I got highs from it. It was, I felt warm, bubbly, all that tingly good stuff. And there's other dimensions to how I would, you know, I think my freshman year in high school, that might have been when I began lying down against the corner, in the corner of my room. I put a couple pillows down, put my butt up on top of them, and have my feet up with my head down below after a good run, before I even really slowed down much metabolically, and I would just have like almost like a bliss or a warmth or just this sensation go out throughout my body from the exercise, and with my head, my feet above my head in that position. It was perfect. I mean, my family had inversion boots, which were the rage, I think, in the late 70s. But that was too, you're hanging like a bat from a chrome bar with these boots over your shins with hooks that hooked onto the bar. That was too much pressure on my head. That was never comfortable. But more of a gentle one with your butt propped up on some pillows and feet straight-legged up into the wall. And then occasionally if the blood ran out of my legs a bit, getting tingly, I would shift them or slightly bend my knees. All this meaning is that most of my life, most of my life, I've been seeking a physiologic environmental release that was not at all inward seeking. There was definitely an inward component to the sensation, the pleasure, etc. And also, in these two-hour hikes or two-hour runs, I would be or attempt to be in a flow, in a zone, where I'm not really even attending to my environment. I'm just like this ball of energy moving along the road, ball of intention. And that's what it was. But that's all my life I've sought that, and it's helped me stay healthy, vital. And the time you exercise is time that you're not eating, synthetic, artificially flavored foods. You're not sitting watching TV. You're not engaged in fairly meaningless social interactions or destructive social interactions. They all have meaning, but it's not a positive meaning most of the time. And so it was yesterday. For the first time in months, I'm starting to feel a bit good again. I've got a lot of ground to make up, but really, one of my goals, given my extensive financial needs and the expensiveness of my lifestyle, which is organic foods and clean air, clean water, supplementation if necessary, and the travels to areas where I can have a hike like this, and hopefully build a home in an area with a hike of this sort nearby. So I do have a couple of parcels down below in the 4,000 to 4,500 foot level. There's some communities down there in the high desert valley where it's a bit too hot to hike midday in the summer. But there are some that are at a distance from cellular towers still. And that's a difficult requirement now as more of these structures go up, toxifying our environments. I was just very pleased to have more energy in my solar plexus. A sensation that my fat was retracting is really a good word. Because it is the case that, or at least I've read that, the number of fat cells in your body stays the same. What changes is how much energy, how much fat is stored in your fat cell. Your fat cells can get bigger. And so a fat person just has bigger fat cells because they're packed with more energy available to use. And I don't need it. I don't want it. I don't think it's sexy. I don't want a fat girlfriend. I don't want to be fat myself. I want to look like I am vital, ready for a 10-mile, 3,000-foot ascent in no time with few stops, and that I could have rewarding athletic sexual relations and have a resting heart rate like it used to be for me in the um, I would I was getting into the low 40s at one point. I don't know, when was this? I think when I was, hiking on Oahu, when I was really in the thick of things on my first leg of this spiritual path, or the second leg, whatever it was, trying to achieve some kind of an activation vibration level through my own volition, you know, that is raise your body up to God to become as physically vital as possible, as energetically combustible as possible. And I was hiking a lot. I was lean. I was 180, 184, you know, as opposed to 220 right now, the lug that I am now, 6'2", you know, but it was, that's how tall I am. But back then, I think it was in the low 40s was my resting heart pulse, heart rate at night. Unless the descending force was coming through me and my body would just race out of control. That was crazy. Very wild. Okay, I'm not going to belabor this now. I'm going to bring a wrap to this. So please, in your own lives, in your own life, you want to seek out routines that ground you, that bring peace and wholeness and some intensity to your thoughts, your feelings, your physicality. And, you know, whatever that is. And I would argue that, you know, if at some point, if walking or golfing becomes not challenging enough, you know, step up the intensity. And you should be listening to your body. The healthier your body gets, I would say, the more your body's going to want. The health, you know, you want to be more and more healthy, because in every way we are striving for perfection, toward the most that we can be, toward something greater in all levels, in all areas. And so you shouldn't just do a half hour walk, come home, pour a martini, light a cigarette or whatever, just come home and just, it doesn't change your life. Your physical regimen should be challenging to every aspect of your being. And in order for it to do that, I mean, listen to me. You know, maybe you're not going to be able to do this hike. You know, maybe you're 85, you're missing a lung, or whatever. But take my heavy breathing and this sustained effort at communication as really a reflection of resolve, of commitment, of allocation of energy and intention. And so, you know, whatever you're doing, you should push it. Don't accept where you are. And, you know, and I went 3 weeks struggling with a variety of hikes and durations and levels of elevation gain, etc. And I came upon something that I think works for me. And like I said, it was 6 hours and 40 minutes, 10 miles, 3,200 feet of elevation gain. And my body And my mind told me that this is where I want to be right now. You know, there are limits, I suppose, but truly, you know, if you know where we are meant to be headed, the solar plexus is meant to be the intake valve for subtle radiation, for subtle energy. That is made into, or so, you know, transformed into an energy source that the body can uptake by the pancreas. That has been my direct experience that is so, which begs the question, you know, I guess it is possible to run a marathon and, you know, and not eat, or maybe go a month and not eating because you're like a breatharian. But I would argue that a breatharian, it's not, the breath is not where you're getting your food. I mean, that's a part of it. It's your solar plexus. They just haven't really described it as such. And so who's to say what is the limit? But look, I've only got so many hours in a day. You know, I'm basically a fallen person in many ways, like so many people are. And, you know, this works for me. But again, put some effort into it. Strive. And push. And then that'll, mean that you're going to work harder in your interpersonal relations, in your political engagements, your diet, everything. Nothing's going to get better without effort. And when you're attacking a mountain like this, or you swim 2,000 meters or whatever is a good distance swimming at a good pace, that builds your will, and it gives you an existential momentum that is unstoppable. And in that state of momentum, you can be rebuffed. You can have someone say no. You can have an opportunity declined on you. But inwardly and existentially, you will feel like God is at your back. God is propelling you through all of this, and therefore experiences that might what's the word I'm searching for? Experiences that might break or dishearten one person in your care, in your situation, where grace is an active part of your daily existence, you won't be dissuaded. You won't be dispirited. You'll carry forward, and maybe you'll modify what you're doing, but you won't take no for an answer, and you'll continue to push onward. And so this hiking or physical exercise of this sort does give you that strength of character, that willpower that is so necessary in the world, because we are straddled by, besieged by tremendous pain, tremendous compromise, tremendous disillusionment of others. And it's important that that not infect you. And so you need to be burning very bright. You need to be very solid, very dedicated, very strong in many, on all levels of your body, mind, spirit, in order to persist amidst all this. So, with that being said, I'll carry on here with you to the junction. I'm on the Pacific Crest Trail, and right up here is maybe, I'm not sure, it might be 1,400 feet up, but still a couple hundred feet below the summit, which is a little ridge trail I'm connecting to. But this is where the Pacific Crest Trail, its high point on Mount Williamson before it descends down bearing west. Okay, that's it for now. Over and out.